not.
What are they worth?
How much was the back pay? How much was the back pay?
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word? This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
Thanks very much, Aaron. Aaron Horsington, the team leader at Client Services Guide Dogs Victoria, and also Brooke Anderson, seeing eye dog instructor with Vision Australia, for both joining us and giving up their time, probably their evening time that's not work time. So we really appreciate that, and looking forward to hearing a few things about telehealth, which is quite a good topic at the moment, especially in shutdown Melbourne. But I think across the country, we've all felt the isolation of not being able to access services physically, etc., over the last 6 months or so. And it looks like it may be a thing of the future as well, at least in part. So really, really good topic to talk about. But before I cross over to Aaron and Brooke, Erica, if you just want to sort of give us a roll call to see who's here and then we can get underway.
Okay, we've got Margaret Crowe, we've got Bev and Warwick Best. We have myself, Erica Webb. We have Ros Matthews. We've got Kevin Murfitt. We've got John Hardy. We've got Jamie Kelly. We've got Cheryl. I don't know Cheryl's last name. We've got Angela Allen.
Cheryl
Newman.
Oh, of
and
course.
We got Angela Allen. We've also had apologies from Joyce Jones, Karen Passmore, and Claudia Stevenson.
Right. So I think...
What happened to me?
Oh, sorry, Francois. Sorry. I can see your name and everything. Sorry.
So I
the
think
invisible
got,
man.
Yes, sorry, Francois. I think we've got most of the states covered, haven't we? Maybe, is there any South Australians? No. Or Northern Territorians? Or Tasmanians, I don't think. But I think we covered the rest of the country, haven't we? Yeah.
Hmm.
That's good. And hopefully a few more will join. But anyway, okay, well, let's go, because we've only got an hour. So what I've suggested is Aaron and Brooke just give us an overview of their telehealth services, and then we can open up for, you know, just discussion and questions. All right. So, Aaron, you were the first one sort of to come on board, so I'll start with you. So I'll just hand over to you to just give us a bit of a presentation about Guide Dogs Victoria's telehealth services and any ideas you have for the future, and then we'll pass to Brooke and then we'll go to questions. Great.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kevin. Thank you for the invite this evening. Good evening, everyone. It's nice to have an opportunity to have a discussion around the changing world that we find ourselves in at the moment with COVID-19 restrictions upon us. No more so than down here in Melbourne. So we're all feeling it, and we're all feeling it together. So you know, I think we're all supportive of each other in the space at this present time. we sort of at Guide Dogs Victoria, we were moved off a site very quickly during March, and most of us have been working off-site ever since then. We do have a small contingent of staff that are still based on site, and they're mainly looking after their care and the welfare of our lovely dogs that are on there, and in the nursery where the new puppies are coming through. So all of the practitioners, so guide dog mobility instructors, orientation and mobility instructors, our support service instructors, CMS instructors are all working from home. And we had to move very quickly into the telehealth space once all the restrictions were put upon us. We stopped face-to-face services very quickly initially, just because I think everyone was extremely uncertain about what was going to be happening next and how COVID-19 might develop within the state and across Australia. So, for the safety of clients and staff and the general community, we moved very quickly to a telehealth practice, which, we had to. So although it was something that had maybe been used previously with some overseas clients we've got and some remote clients, it wasn't something that we practiced on a regular basis. So it was quite new to a lot of the staff that were working in this space. And since then, we've been developing and improving our telehealth practices along the way. I think in the guide dog space and in the O&M space, I think there are restrictions upon what we can actually provide with telehealth. So we've had a look at, in the guide dog space, certainly looking at some of the services that we would generally provide. So if we look at our regular follow-up services, we feel that we can provide a good telehealth service around that. There are some orientation programs that we're able to assist with via telehealth, and also orientation programs as well. One of the things that I think we would struggle with telehealth is that initial guide dog training program. So getting the owner and the dog together in the early stages. So we still feel that we need to have an instructor presence there. And potentially for some aftercare programs that might present some safety issues, especially if they're involving road crossings and such environments like that. So we are currently delivering face-to-face services again in a restricted sort of environment. So we do need to go into bat for every one of our programs that we want to go out on the street and deliver face-to-face. We have to go through a very rigorous risk assessment submission. So that needs to be approved by senior leadership and the COVID-19 response team, and then we can go out and with the risks being mitigated to a degree, with wearing of masks and hand hygiene, then and social distancing, then we are actually able to deliver some of those services that we can't deliver through telehealth, and that's also helped us keep new customers engaged with us as well, because we can actually go out and complete some assessments as well. So people new to the guide dog world. So we're probably currently running a bit of a hybrid system with more leaning to telehealth for the routine requirements of our client base out there. And then it appears, and I think that we're all in agreement that will be the future moving forward as well. That an element of telehealth, which will improve hopefully our response times to those individuals that maybe live further away than.
Oh, goodness. Sorry, Aaron, we're just losing you at the minute.
Oh, sorry. I just heard Big Ben.
Yep. Big Ben makes a regular appearance.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yes. So that's where we're sitting at the moment, delivering some face-to-face services and utilising telehealth as best we can, where it suits our customers as well.
Right. And is there any new telehealth that you hadn't done pre-COVID? that you're doing now in terms of, I know you're transferring a lot of service, but is there anything new that's happened in terms of telehealth services, you know, that have come through this isolation period?
Not new at the moment. I think what we've been focusing on really is trying to get back as much as we can to business as usual.
Right.
We've really been focusing on sort of understanding the challenges that our clients are having out there with the dogs, perhaps maybe with the restricted workload that the dogs are getting. We are experiencing some further behavioural challenges that we weren't experiencing previously. And also, you know, with that and trying to get the production line moving again so that we can actually get people trained up with guide dogs, that's taking up a lot of our time. So the innovation has been around the delivery of the telehealth practice, I think, rather than the actual delivery of using it.
Yeah. So, yeah, getting all the current ones into being more accessible online is a huge challenge in itself. Yeah, yeah. Sure. All right. Thanks, Aaron. We'll pass over to Brooke now just to give us an overview and then we can have a discussion and some questions.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. So similar sort of boat in terms of in production and moving off site and sort of the earlier stuff Aaron mentioned, similar sort of things happening. In May, I had 5 dogs in my house, so I'm happy that my husband's still happy with me. and so they've all been able to be sort of placed in various different states and stuff with their clients. So, dog production-wise, not slowing down. Telehealth-wise, huge sort of initiatives that we've come up with recently. The first one that sort of excites me to have the technology side of things just excites me in general, and happy to talk about this forever, but I'll try and keep it brief. We were able to do a remote training program with a client in Queensland. The client did start her training a couple of days at Seeing Eye Dogs, and then that's when the restrictions were posed, and so they had to go back to Queensland without their dog, unfortunately, because it was only a couple of days that they had done. Upon the client initiating, they really were interested in being able to figure out any way possible to be able to deliver a program and have their dog trained with them. And so it was about a 4 to 8 week process of really finding how we were going to deliver a program completely remotely in a way that is safe, because safety is a huge thing. And so for us, it was making sure the client regularly sort of had a support worker come in every sort of regularly. And so it was increasing those hours for the safety side of things, the videoing from behind, bone conducting headphones for the client so they could hear very much what we were saying. And the device didn't have to be in their pocket or anything. And so in the end, we were able to successfully train that team to a safe standard, and the instructor was in Melbourne and the client was in Queensland. We've sort of maintained contact with that client. They've been working now for about 3 to 4 months, and there's been no issues. And from the reports of sort of her feedback from all of that was that she was highly happy that we were able to sort of continue with her, sort of be able to implement something that she was quite interested in and eager for. And so there was similar results as based on our class situation as a sort of at Seeing Eye Dogs and the remote program that we were able to do. So that was highly exciting, really sort of liked following that one. Obviously it's not going to be something that can will and suit everyone. It will be obviously something that we would consider, but it's not going to be something that we move towards for at all. So it's not that we're going to replace training with remote delivery 100%, but more in individual circumstances where if it's something the client's very interested in, that it's not that we'll sort of shut that off. It's more that we'll explore it with the client. And so talking about sort of the pros and cons there, it is very essential in that situation that you already have a support network in terms of support workers coming out, because someone is needed there every time we do train and go out of that house. So instead of sort of you're able to sort of use existing supports there. So further sort of telehealth stuff that we do, sort of all of the follow-ups, a lot of the issues that you guys are having with potentially your dogs can be focused, at least the initial stuff, at home. And so programs have been sort of individually tailored for people to do sort of weekly check-ins and moving towards sort of their goal. And so it is very much giving the control back to you in terms of, you know, some people say, oh, the dog's only reacting really well now because you're here, but we're completely removed. So the dogs have no idea that we're on the screen. And so it really makes you feel quite empowered to be able to say that your dog's moved towards and achieving something because of the skills you have. And so we can definitely sort of work with you in individualized plans. Route orientation, so the use of sort of Google Maps now, and has sort of this real-time location data thing. And so some clients, when we've trained them a route, really the confidence to do it independently for the first time can be something that someone needs to build on. And so knowing that you've shared that sort of with your instructor means that we can sort of follow you on that journey. And if you say, hey, look, I'm lost, then we sort of exactly know because you're pinpointed there as well. So a lot of sort of app technology there that we've sort of tapped into.
And what sort of apps are you using there, Brooke? Sorry.
No, that's all right. So sort of similar to Ira, we use a lot of Zoom, or if you've got an iPhone, we do video in. Sorry, my dog's moving my table underneath me. There we go. wants to move it away. So a lot of sort of Google Maps, sort of the real location, Zoom for like video feedback as well. And then if people need sort of further training with the application before doing something like that, then we have our access technology consultants do sort of a program with them. So the telehealth setup was definitely something that took a little bit of time because everyone sort of was transitioning to this Zoom world. Yes. And so learning to download it was definitely something that was, and use it was something that we needed to sort of spend a lot of time on. As well as that, is there are people that aren't going to feel confident using Zoom, and technology might not even be something they possess. And so that sort of leads me into our next thing that we were sort of doing, which is when this all happened, and even as an instructor, I was sitting there going, I've got five dogs at home. How am I going to ensure they're all enriched? How am I going to get them out? My husband has a seeing eye dog. How's that work going to sort of happen? And so we sort of just sat there, and COVID was something that no traineeship prepares you for. No sort of training can prepare you for it. And so one of the biggest things was enrichment. So we started a telehealth series and sort of rolled that out to our client base where they can come, teach them about all of these enrichment things. And in that sort of led us to ask people what it is that they want, what it is, because most of you had similar questions. And so that led us to do further telehealth sessions on dog attacks and then managing dog distraction. And then managing dog distractions, distractions has about finished now. And so we're rolling into traveling with your seeing eye dog and COVID related items. And so we're going to be able to sort of give skills in terms of how to teach your dog how to determine the markers on the floor, and can your dog then be able to socially distance that way? Because a lot of them know platform targeting, and so we're giving you the skills if it is something you're interested in. And it does take some time, but definitely something we can sort of help with. So, yeah, a few things. Our client survey is going out soon. So on that information, we really are going to do initiatives that you guys are sort of going to throw at us, because telehealth is definitely something that we're not ending after COVID. It's something we're going to continue, especially these check-ins, because people are so socially engaged that the feedback has just been astounding. It's so nice to be able to connect with your peers over one topic. And so, yeah, I've loved running them, but I'll try not to talk forever. I always look at the time because I could continue forever, but I'll wait for questions and then hopefully we'll extract some information from there.
Great. No, thanks, Brooke. That was a great overview. And thanks very much, Aaron. So we'll just open it up now to discussion and questions. And while I've got the floor, I'll just do my quick one and then I'll sit back. Brooke, you mentioned about the COVID-related stuff. So, I mean, I'm on my fifth dog now and none of my dogs know how to cue. So they'll stand in a cue and then won't move forward. until someone nudges me, and then they'll move forward and they'll crash into the person in front of them. So they're just not good cures. Is there any training that alleviates that?
It's definitely something that they don't understand the ability to pay for something. They think that everything should just be for free. definitely queuing is something that they don't understand the concept of why you're doing it. But rather what you can do is, again, most of these skills can be taught at home. And so especially if you've got people with you, and if you've got a hallway's great because they're narrow, so you can get someone to wait, you know, ask your dog to move. And so you're slowly moving as well, making it sort of like a queuing situation. There's a lot you can set up in your home, and so it's teaching the dog sort of that they can't progress further than that.
Yeah, but then to progress when there's a gap, that's
And so when that person takes the sort of a step forward, sometimes what the dogs have learnt is that they have to wait for our sort of
command,
hand forward. And so what you're sort of waiting for the dog is it might be a subtle sort of either a lead cue or something, but you're waiting for them to make, you know, a looking forward, a motion forward, a step. And as soon as they make that one step without you sort of being able to encourage them to do something, you just praise them, because you want to foster that initiative, because all of their training has been don't move until I say forward. And so talking about apps, my apologies.
I need your consent on a few items to continue.
I downloaded an app. It's on my phone. It's a mobility one. I just don't know what it is, and it keeps asking for my consent, so it might buzz a couple of times.
That's all right. No, thanks, Brooke. Okay, open it up to the floor now. So anyone got any questions for Aaron or Brooke, or any comments? That's great.
Yes, I'd like to address Brooke if I can. It's Margaret.
Hi, Margaret. How are you?
Good, thanks, dear. You mentioned in your opening address of target marking.
Yep.
Can you expand on that a little bit for so I can then pick it up and take it forward?
Yeah, so just to clarify, target marking where did I say that bit? Sorry.
In the COVID stuff, I think.
Oh, as in the markings on the floor. Yep, yeah. The social distancing markers. Yep, sorry, I'm there now. So we're sort of going to be able to sort of, if you can, sort of a mat or something that's sort of bigger first, putting them sort of on the floor and getting your dog to target, then we can teach you the skills. And so it is sort of like an hour session that we go through with you. So I'll try and summarize it the best I can in a couple of minutes. But the idea is that we're teaching the dogs to identify things on the floor and to initiate moving towards them. And as soon as they get to that thing, you can sort of praise them. And so then when you ask for a forward, is that there's another marker in front. And so you're actually asking the dog to go forward to that marker. And so the things that you place on the floor first will be very hard targets. And so not your small circle, but rather something that might have some type of definition to it. So a towel or a mat, something that's very obvious, and then working smaller and smaller and smaller until you get to this small circle.
Okay. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that explains it well. Thank you very much for that.
No problem.
So, Brooke, would that help with the queuing situation that Kevin was talking about? Because could the dog associate the person moves, the sighted person in front of us moves forward from one marker to the next? So would the dog then be able to use their initiative to move forward to that marker? Does that make sense what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. It is two different skills. You could teach sort of them separately and then hopefully combine it, but you couldn't do it all at once. A lot of training is breaking things into really small skills. And definitely possible, but we just have to set our expectations in terms of if we're happy to put in the effort and the training program, which could take 2 weeks to 6 weeks or potentially more depending on the dog and yourself. It's just about if you're happy doing that, then the skills could be there. But yeah, the dog's not going to unfortunately learn it in one or two seconds.
Yeah.
Could I maybe just move right back to the basics of telehealth? I mean, I think it's since March or April, whenever I started hearing the term telehealth, and I was pretending that I know what they're talking about, but I really don't, because I hear it in the context of doctors providing telehealth services. I'm now hearing it also in terms of dog guide services, whether it's individual or group. I would like to just understand, what does telehealth really mean, or what it might look like? Is it group? Is it individual? And then my second question, really, if we're interested, I've heard about telehealth services, addressing things like dog distractions, whatever, how would we go about, if you want to know which ones are coming up, be it individual or group, whatever, but then how you might engage with one of those sessions that interest you?
Is that for me or Aaron? Sorry, Francois.
Anybody? Aaron,
I'll have a go at that one. I'll give Brooke a little rest there because she's done so well having a good chat with you all. So I suppose telehealth for us is basically, it's allowed us to continue delivering the services that we were originally delivering to people when we're able to meet them face to face, and still being able to deliver the service from a distance. Now, I think as Brooke has quite rightly stated, we are led very much by what the clients would like from us. So we do have various options of communicating via telehealth. And telehealth, from our point of view, could be a phone call, could be a Zoom session, could be something over FaceTime, could be something where the individual is actually holding a mobile device and showing us around the environment that they're in, or it could be that they're having a carer or support worker walking behind them or in front of them and actually doing live stream or video for us to review and provide advice on. Now, some people, you know, may not be comfortable with having a video feed into their home, so That's absolutely fine. We can work around that and use different modes of communication around that. I think it's about having that communication. It's about keeping that engagement with everybody, but equally ensuring that we're delivering on an outcome that the client is wanting from us as well. So identifying what it is that you guys might want out of the telehealth session, and then leading us into the direction that you would like to, for the information you would like us to provide to you. So how do you find out about group sessions and individual sessions? So Guidehogs Victoria just opening up a new community hub soon. There'll be a lot of information on there that people can access via the web. And really it's about thinking that we're still open for business as usual. So if you wanted some advice about some mobility, long cane work, guide dog work, in the past, before March, when we're all sent off site, you would have rang up and requested that support. We encourage you to continue doing that. We're still open for business as usual, and we'll still respond as best we can to any requests for services.
Right, Aaron, thanks.
So am I right in saying then telehealth service is just sort of a new terminology for having non-face-to-face service in whatever form? Is that fair to say that?
I think so, yes, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with Aaron as well. In regards to the sessions, it is the sessions that we run monthly are group sessions. That's a maximum of 6 people per session, but the sort of client assessments and follow-ups and things like that. Yeah, very much individual. If people want individual plans, then it is individual sort of check-ins every week as well. So, yeah, you are right, Francois. Yeah, it's just another fancy word for saying non-face-to-face.
That makes it easy to understand. Thank you.
And so, Francois, I was just going to finish just about promotion of the telehealth, which is part of your question. Is that what you're going to follow up on?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. You go.
Yeah, so an email currently is sent out for the topics that are currently running. We're in the process of developing a new communication plan in regards to what is best to sort of target you guys, and our client survey will definitely help get sort of the methods that you like to use for that, because I can understand and appreciate the multiple emails that everyone gets, especially in a COVID world. So at the moment, yeah, the Seeing Eye Dog Telehealth group ones are very much email based, but by all means ringing and asking, or the individual sessions, by all means, it's very much tailored towards your individual needs. So that's just giving us a call and we can go from there.
Great. Thanks, Francois. Others? Gee whiz. We got through quick. Just trying to think if I've got any more. I should have.
Kevin, I can probably add as well the thing that I found really good in terms of your lifestyles, and especially for replacement handlers, the telehealth and assessments have been, at least from my perspective and the perspective that I've heard from, it, the telehealth has really helped a great deal. We've been working with you guys for about 10 years when you're trying to, or 8 years when you're trying to go for your replacement dog. And so we have a good knowledge base about, you and the type of work that you're currently doing. And so often trying to find the time to do an interview with us is important, and I can appreciate that you do find it important, but you've got other life commitments as well. And so the telehealth aspect meant that now we can do these at a time that is very convenient for you. I woke up at 6 in the morning and did a telehealth and assessment for someone recently, and then I've done one at 6 p.m. And so it's very flexible and can work around your lifestyle and time commitments, which is a benefit to sort of the telehealth option if people are sort of interested. Definitely will come out face-to-face, but where people have found that difficulty in finding the time because, you've got work and things like that, we can sort of work around you a lot better.
Yeah, the flexibility, that's great. I remember my question now, and that is around rural and remote clients. Doesn't telehealth give you more scope to actually give people more options for service in rural and remote communities?
Yes, I think that's a very good point, Kevin. It's people that do live a bit further away, they've always felt that the attention that was given on face-to-face services might not have been the same as people who are living nearer to the base, as it were. So this can actually, increase the time we were able to spend with individuals and enhance their programs from a distance.
Yes. And same with you, Brooke. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think being sort of national provider, I'm doing a session with a client on Friday who's in sort of regional New South Wales, and we're working on sort of dog distraction and people distraction stuff. And so, we're definitely able to sort of do some of that work from home. The phone is fantastic. The programs that we have been able to sort of deliver face-to-face have been complemented on telehealth, because we, in a world post-COVID, the telehealth aspect of someone doing a class in their home, sometimes people feel that that's fantastic, but they're missing that social element of connecting with people during the class time. And so the last class that happened, we had 3 people doing it from home. For the safety aspect, we can't bring people into centre. And so we connected all them every day with each other. And so they were going through it at the same time and learning the same things just in their own home. And so that's been sort of something that we plan on doing long term, because that way, if people are interested, if the person's not, then we won't connect them. But it just means that that option is there for people. Definitely regional is the telehealth services definitely help in summary.
Yep, great, Dev, thank you.
Dev, Brooke, I have a question, please. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hey, Bev, how are you? Long time no see.
Yeah, not too bad. My current dog is like 8 years old, and with this COVID-19 thing happening, I probably should be having an assessment now if it's going to last 2 years or whatever. So what's your suggestion about that?
For a replacement? Sorry, I muted myself and then my Outlook's going crazy, technology, that I can talk about all the things that also go wrong as well, but and it could be interest to people of how we overcome them. But coming back to the assessment part is, yeah, so the assessment, are you talking more about your check-in or about applying for a new dog, just to clarify?
Applying for a new dog, a replacement dog.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's fifth dog, so... you know, like she's 8 years old now, and so what kind of time frame are we looking about, thinking about, like, 6 foot, you know, like we've heard that there was a glut of seeing our dogs at seeing our dogs because of the COVID,
mm-hmm.
but obviously it's got to match the right person, so.
Yeah.
How long ahead do you plan for an assessment?
Good question. The assessment applying and sort of that initiation to get a new dog, by all means, is very personal. And so if you're ready, by all means, give us a call. That assessment process can either be done in Queensland face-to-face with Brendan or via telehealth, whatever sort of option is available and you're happy with. We have been working sort of with you for a long time. So again, that replacement handler, we've got a lot of information already. And so we can streamline it with a telehealth service. In terms of the wait time, you're right. We have sort of not slowed down in the dog production side. And so we do now sort of have this bank of dogs that we're sort of being able to slowly do programs with, depending on where and what state they're heading to, face-to-face in most of the country, but definitely not Victoria, and Victorian sort of instructors not traveling because you probably don't want to see us anyway.
Can I ask, well, firstly, just a quick comment. Aaron briefly mentioned this community hub thing, and I can confirm on the guidedogsvictoria.com.au site, it talks about community, my way. And I read on there that it's available to all, to everybody, whether or not you're a guide dog's client or not, which means all of us. And the question part of this is, surely, obviously, people are spending their time and expertise on it. So I'm imagining there would be a cost on it, whether or not it's NDIS dependent. I would just like to get clarity. And if we, as well, NDIS provided participants or not, want to have capacity to make use of telehealth service, how would we provide for that in our plans?
Oh, yes, I can. Yeah, so sorry, I think there was two questions there, Francois. Can you
just basically, it was a comment on the thing on the community hub, but if you can expand on that for the benefit of all of us, it'll be great. And then about the NDIS or how we would provide for capacity to pay for telehealth services if there's a cost to it.
Right. Okay. From the community hub point of view, I think when that's up and running, you're right, it'll be accessible to everybody. And there'll be information on there that is specific to each individual state, and it'll also be nationwide information as well. So it will be broken down into different areas. I'm not sure, I haven't heard that there's going to be a cost involved in being a member or being able to access that, Francois. So I think it's going to be accessible for everybody.
Oh, sorry, no, Aaron, I mean, the cost I was referring to is relating to the telehealth, not the community hub, which my understanding is it's just a social media platform, it's free.
Yeah, that's correct, yes, yeah. And then for the funding of telehealth programs, those people that do have access to funding or government funding, whether that be TAC funding or NDIS funding or Veteran Affairs funding, we are able to invoice for those telehealth practices now because they are beneficial to allowing people to or encouraging people and supporting their access to the community. We can create a needs summary when your plan is up for review to have those hours included in your next NDIS plan.
Might just also in there in terms of NDIS. So there are two separate things when we talk about sort of NDIS and telehealth, those being group and those being individual. So any time that you're in a group with more than one person, for instance, our group sessions that are run every month, the rate in which the instructor sort of charges something, can you can't quote me, but it's I think it's $193.66 or something like that. And so because you're in a group, that actually gets divided. And so if you're ever participating in a group telehealth wise or even in face-to-face, that is then divided amongst the team. And so it's for three people, I think it's something like $64 for the group sessions. Whereas the individual sessions, telehealth or face-to-face wise, NDIS see it as sort of similar services, and especially sort of the content being delivered. Does that help, Francois?
Yes, thanks. I think it's at CB, whatever that one.
Daily?
Yes, CB daily thing.
In regards to the hours and how you bill for those in your plan, it depends on what you want in your sort of the next year. So if you plan on having a combination of telehealth and face-to-face, but using those same amount of hours that you've been sort of getting throughout the year, then you don't specifically have to have a line item in there for telehealth services because it's just the instructor time that you're paying for. And so the NDIS don't really mind if it's telehealth or face-to-face or how it's delivered. So the hours-wise is just how much support in the year you need, regardless of sort of how you're receiving it.
Right. That's answered that, Francois. Yep. Okay, thanks.
Kevin, Cheryl here, if I could ask
yes,
a follow-up
yep.
question with that. So, Aaron, if I understood you correctly, or it might have been Brooke, I don't remember which one of you mentioned, but in terms of some elements of a program would require perhaps a third party to be involved as a on the ground support while the program's being delivered, or taking video, for example, in an assessment situation. So presumably then, in terms of billing and cost, there'd be the cost of the instructor or trainer in addition to the support worker, for example, who is involved in that on the ground role. And just wondering, I guess, how that works. I guess it's just borne by the client's plan that it just comes out of the hours. And it just is an additional cost because you have that other person involved as well.
Yeah.
I think that's potentially the case, Cheryl. You are, let's say, for instance, you have an O&M specialist in the region, and then you're receiving GDMI instruction, and the O&M specialist is being the support person. We would only charge for the one practitioner in that event.
Mm-hmm.
If you have OT support or something else, and that was part of the program, and that was included in the program, and there was a necessity to have two people involved in the program, then each of those practitioners would get paid for their part in that program.
Okay, yep, that makes sense.
Mm. Thanks, Cheryl.
Okay, thank you.
Is there someone else who wanted to ask questions then? Okay, it's my word. I think it's Brooke I need to address at this stage. When you're talking about the programs that are available and the cost, and that you're talking about NDIS.
Yeah,
apart from the NDIS, you have My Age Care. So does that run the same way? Same structure of fees or cost?
Yeah, good question. My aged care packages are all very different, and so it does depend on the individual package. We don't often have my aged care packages that do fund sort of instructor time, and so we provide those out of sort of the grant donation money we receive. All of the services that we provide, if it's the NDIS that sort of we can recuperate some of those expenses that we are incurring, then we'll sort of charge the relevant party. But where someone doesn't have that funding, it's not that we don't provide that service. It's then when our donation money can kick in and sort of be able to continue that service with you. And so I think it's the, and don't know if anyone has one in here, but a CHISP program where that's got sort of specialized vision sort of costs in there. That's sometimes where we can charge in terms of our time that we come out to spend with you. But we can't charge for like training programs and delivery of dogs. So every funding stream has different things that we can and can't charge for. But yeah, if you haven't been spoken to about it before, it most likely is that you don't either have a package or anything that we can. And so donation money is used for those people because we do want to make sure it is equal across the board.
Mm. I haven't asked for any assistance in any way, shape or form. I just got on with it. But
in regards to Cheryl's question before about NDIS and different providers, in regards to that one program that I talked about being very remote and us delivering the whole training program, the client already had the support hours in there for their support worker because mm-hmm. that was external to our organisation. Mm-hmm. And so she was paying for the support worker and the instructor because they provided different roles, whereas similar to what Aaron was saying, another one where I did recently an assessment and required that video footage to complete my assessment, they were receiving O&M services from us. And so when the O&M went out to do a program, they just took video footage, so I wasn't needed at all, and two charges were not incurred for that person.
Okay. Now, the second question I wanted to raise with you, the services that you're providing in Melbourne, close and able to contact with a lot of the people who've been trained or are in the process of being trained, how much is being done in Parramatta on the same level?
So Parramatta, face-to-face services in New South Wales are a thing. And so a service provider-wise, we are able to continue as normal. Telehealth services are still available to people. The difference between New South Wales, though, is some of our instructors have been locked out. You don't want us. And so we do have the one instructor there who can provide that sort of remedial at work, but a whole state is a very big place to sort of travel around. And so, he's sort of doing emergency cases and then telehealth where people have sort of some of those things where we can work indoors to help fix. Otherwise, yeah, definitely working with the person to be able to overcome that. We have also gone into a transdisciplinary approach. We do have regions across sort of the country. And so where possible, if O&Ms are also there, they've been able to sort of help in terms of giving us that virtual presence and having someone on the ground, again, not charged for two people.
Okay. Now, the reason I've asked you along those lines is because my sight is varying. It can be good today and it'll be absolutely blurry and I can recognise shapes only. There is a possibility that I will need to take more training in moving around. Let's say it's deteriorated so far that it's almost you're in a blind capacity. At the moment, I've got enough sight to, with the dog, to avoid objects and getting on and off the train, no problems at all. Mainly because of the dog, the way the dog has been trained and the way he works. So there is a possibility that further down the track that I would need to take more loss of sight training. And will that be available at Parramatta?
Yeah, definitely. We'll be able to sort of support with that. I can, here's hoping that you have many good days ahead, but definitely there to support where needed. And most of it will be confidence. And by all means, we can set up things in your house to gain confidence about what your dog's doing, as well as providing that training outside as well. Whatever sort of you're needed, we can provide.
Well, I have a very single story home, and I've been here nearly 60 years, so I seem to know it all back to the front, know how to get around it, and it's all that if a chair or a table's in the road, it is moved, and I note it and make sure that I just get around that.
Oh, no, I totally understand. COVID has meant that I've had a lot of time to do some decorating inside, but my husband hasn't liked that because I put a chair somewhere and all those things that people tell you don't change the household. He was not impressed with me. So,
yes, well, we're all with your husband on that one.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm the one telling everyone else, and then I go change everything up. So, COVID hasn't been great for the house.
Thanks, Margaret, for that question.
In the future, hopefully it'll be a while before that comes into fruition. But knowing that I can get that assistance from Parramatta once it happens, it makes a big difference. And I thank you for your time. Thank you for that time to talk to me about it.
Great. Thanks, Margaret. That's fine. Any other questions, final questions for anyone? No? All right. Well, look, thank you so much. Oh, are we still there?
Yes.
Oh, good. Yep. I just had a posted attendee thing come through my ear. Thought I'd cut myself off. So thanks very much, Aaron and Brooke. That was really informative, and really appreciate your time. I want to thank Jamie Kelly also, who actually came up with this idea and did the groundwork for this members meeting. And look, thank you all very much for participating. I hope it was informative. And thanks, Erica, for being the host. Really appreciate that as well. But on that note, look, really good session. And we look forward to having more. Hopefully about another 3 months, we'll have another session on another topic. But again, thanks a lot, Aaron and Brooke, for your time tonight.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?